workshop is officially titled Beyond Newspapers. The idea being that we all, of course, read newspapers, but many of us do very different things to get public awareness, to raise funds, to increase accessibility. We know that there are many of you doing unique things. If we have time, we will hopefully talk about the other things that you do. But here's a couple we wanted to highlight to get your thinking caps going. So first is Lisa Neely with Howl Radio.
Yay! Woohoo, Texas! Hello everyone, I'm Lisa from San Antonio. I'm actually with the Low Vision Resource Center, and Owl Radio is actually one of our projects, which is probably why Mary Frances asked me to speak to you today. I am going on my 7th year as the executive director of the Low Vision Resource Center. Before that, in my other life, I ran a school for 18 years, and also in San Antonio. So that was a nonprofit, and a lot of that information that I had carried with me has done me a lot of good where I am now. So before I can tell you a little bit more about what we do with the Low Vision Resource Center, do you like my PowerPoint? I worked all night on it. I have to tell you a little bit of the history of how we came to be, because we actually did not start as a radio reading service. Bonnie Truex, which I know Mike remembers Bonnie, she was our founder. She started the Low Vision Resource Center after she was diagnosed with macular degeneration. And the story she tells is she was at the doctor's office and he said, "You have macular degeneration and you're going to go blind." And then sent her on her way. So when she got home, she was like, what am I supposed to do with that information? How am I supposed to move ahead? What am I going to do when I do lose my vision? So Bonnie started a low vision club in San Antonio in 1997. That club met once a month, and she invited anyone and everyone who was experiencing vision loss to come to the club, to come to the meetings. She would bring in doctors and uplifting presentations, things like that, to get people to share about their experience. At one point, within the first 2 years, the club had 900 members. So you can imagine, it really showed what a need that they had. It was then in 99, she incorporated as the Low Vision Resource Center. And her whole purpose at that time was just to be the go-to person. If you got the diagnosis, you could pick up the phone and go, "This just happened to me, and I don't know what to do." So it wasn't until 2002, after many, many Low Vision Club meetings, that a lot of the members said, "I really miss reading the newspaper. That was like my thing, you know, get my cup of coffee, read the paper." So Bonnie and her best friend Sally, who was on my board up until last year when she passed away, and she was amazing, Bonnie and Sally, Thelma and Louise, drove to Houston, got with Jim and Carrie, and figured out how to do the same thing in San Antonio that Sight and Sound was doing in Houston. So that's how we got into the radio reading service. So a lot of the stuff that we did in the beginning, Bonnie passed away in 2009. A lot of the things that she started, we still do. And that's what I kind of wanted to share with you today. One of the main functions that Bonnie wanted us to be was the resource of San Antonio. If you pick up the phone and you have a need, she wanted that need answered without having to make 15,000 different phone calls because you're already traumatized that you're losing your vision. So she started what was called the Low Vision Expo. About 2 months ago, we just finished hosting our 24th annual Low Vision Expo. So let me describe what the expo looks like. We started the expo in a gymnasium at a school. Fun fact, it's not really that fun, I just like to say that. I was the director of the school. So they used our gymnasium for their Low Vision Expo. Expo started very small, maybe 20 to 25 vendors. We would set them up in the gym. We would set up speakers in our sanctuary, and we would bring in all sorts of doctors and what's new with retina development, you know, what's happening. But the vendors would be the lighthouse, people who trained O&M, rehab people. Just everything you can imagine, we tried to pull together people. So if you were recently diagnosed with vision loss, or you were already had lost your vision, you could come to one place and find out every resource in San Antonio where you could get help. So we went from 25 to 30 vendors. The last one we just had, well, during COVID, we were like, yeah, we're not going to be able to do this. But we decided, no, this is the time to do it. So we got in a collaboration with San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind. We did it on a Zoom call. We had over 300 people on a Zoom all day Saturday. We had six presenters. We had tons of vendors. We had individual vendor rooms that people could go in and out of. And the lighthouse was amazing. They would wire you in if you called and said, I really want to visit with Crystal Vision, who's one of our people in San Antonio that does the devices and magnifiers and things like that. They could wire you into their Zoom room, and so it was a great thing for us not to skip it. We now have it at a hotel. It's a much bigger event. I used to have trouble getting sponsorship for it. Now people call me and say, hey, next time you throw that, be sure to put me on your list as a vendor. So we now have about 75 to 80 vendors. And in April when we had it, we had 368 people attend, which, considering we didn't know if people were going to come out or not, we were real pleased with the results of it. So what questions would you have about Expo?
Is there a charge for it?
No, it's free of charge.
Do you charge the vendors?
I charge the vendors $25 if they're a nonprofit or $75 if they're for profit.
Do you handle all the registration stuff, or it's just
show right? So
yeah.
I usually get a couple volunteers to help me manage the project. It takes a good 4 months to really get it.
Sorry, I do want to step on you. How did you get the word out? How did you build to 368 attendees?
Great question. So that's kind of going to lead me into another thing that we're actively involved in spearheading. We spearhead what we call the Low Vision Coalition in San Antonio. This started in, I'd say, 2002. And what we quickly realized, because we were the go-to, we were the people that were getting the phone calls, and we would say, you know, maybe an 18-year-old person called and they wanted to seek employment. Maybe a 90-year-old person called and they just wanted someone to come out and help them make their home safe. We were getting all of these phone calls, and we quickly realized there were a lot of resources in San Antonio, but we weren't sure who was doing what. Okay, you're serving 0 to 18, you're serving 21 to the, you know. So we formed the Low Vision Coalition, and we meet monthly, believe it or not. We've taken the summer off. But that coalition consists of the San Antonio Lighthouse, our University School of Optometry, the VA, Region 20, which we're in Texas. The different educational areas have different regions that they head. So Region 20 is one of those people. So it's a group. It's doctors, low vision doctors. That's how we get the word out. So the coalition kind of helps spread the word, because they're dealing directly with the patients. They're dealing directly with the people that need all the resources. So they help get it out. Our newspaper, Texas Public Radio, gives us free advertising for the event. It's pretty well known now because we've been doing it for 24 years. People know that it's always going to take place in March or April. We'll start getting calls probably the end of the summer. When is it? What's going on? So that's how we spread the word.
Here in Iowa, the two consumer groups, the two main ones, are the ACB and the NFB. Are they involved?
Yes.
So
NFB, well, they always attend. ACB, they attend sometimes. San Antonio is a military city, so a lot of the veterans, the Blinded Vets Association, a lot of those organizations are in attendance. We also try to pull in some fun things. You know, we have, not that Tupperware is fun, but, you know, Tupperware or jewelry, or we try to get superheroes there, so there's photo ops and things like that. The past year, we tried to pull a children's section together. We have an organization called Team Ability that helps people of all disabilities. They put together this cool little area for kids to play. Then the Lighthouse has a great children's program. It wasn't that well attended, but I don't think we had time to publicize it that well for the children's part, but it's something that we're going to keep doing probably.
How is your organization funded that you can only charge $25?
Sponsor, you mean the event?
Yeah.
Sponsorship.
Does the event support the organization overall?
So the event is really one of our main projects. So you look at Low Vision Resource Center, that's me, right? Then Low Vision Resource Center has the Low Vision Expo, the Low Vision Club, which I'll tell you about in a minute, and OWL Radio. So all of my grant funding and things like that, you know, I will be very specific to those. But Low Vision Expo, I've never written a grant to fund it. Local organizations, local corporations fund the event. Our local School of Optometry, the University of Incarnate Word, UT Health. It's known now, so pretty much end of summer, I'll start asking for the money for that, and I've never gotten in the hole.
Does it support your other two?
No.
Okay.
Have you been able to parlay any of the expo sponsors into broadcast sponsors or vice versa?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I kind of divide them, you know, on my fancy pieces of paper like this, so I'm not bugging the same group all the time. But I do divide them up based on how much collateral I think I can get out of them for each particular event. This is a high exposure event, so what they get for sponsoring at, say, a $3,000 level is they are on OWL Radio. They are, you know, the sponsor of the reading of the San Antonio Express News for 6 months, you know, or things like that.
Okay, cool.
Any other questions about Expo? It's a great event. It's a pain. It's a lot of work. I'm not going to lie about it. But it's so rewarding. And when you see the people that come out, they're your listeners, you know. So it's great for forming that bond of relationship. Any more questions about Expo? Okay, one of the other things we do at Expo is we produce the Low Vision Resource Guide for San Antonio. Excuse me. So this guide is distributed. We update it every year. We give it out at Expo in your goodie bag when you check in. But we also distribute it at all of the optometrists and ophthalmologists' office, because what we found, hold on, I need a drink of water. 1 minute. What we found is that a lot of the ophthalmologists, they don't want to do what they did to Bonnie. They don't want to say, you're going to go blind and send you home. But they don't know what else to do, because they're busy. They're overbooked. They don't have time to know all the stuff that's in this guide. They do have the time, but a lot of them don't take the time. So in this guide is everything that you, all those questions you're going to have when you get home. What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to call? What's available on my phone app? What's, I mean, just some stuff that's in here. What does low vision mean? Am I ever going to get my vision back? What's available in my area to help me? Household hints like how to take care of your home, your kitchen, money, laundry. How are you going to do all these things? Who's doing the rehab in San Antonio? Where can you get transportation to your doctor's appointments? What if I want a guide dog? All the stuff is in here. So this is another one of the projects that came from having the Low Vision Expo. We update this every year. The minute we update it, we get two volunteers to start working on updating it so that it's ready for the next expo. Usually, and this year I did not get it, but usually I get someone to sponsor the printing of this, and then it will say this year's was sponsored by Boeing or, you know, whoever. But we get lots of calls from doctor's office asking us to replenish this a lot.
How many copies do you print?
Usually about 3,000 a year. And we're out of them by the time.
Can I pass it around?
You can, and it's also on our website on PDF form. Let me see if there's anything else in my PowerPoint that I need to tell you. So I told you about the coalition. Okay, so the Low Vision Club. Remember, this was how we originally started. The Low Vision Club is still going. We meet the third Saturday of the month. Once again, these are still your listeners. We bring in speakers, which is a challenge because you never know what everyone wants to hear. Lately, we've been bringing in speakers who are all about lifting people up. Because what we found during COVID, and I think all of you can vouch for that, is our listeners, they were lost just like we were. So during that time, we made sure that we were bringing things that made them feel good. It used to be that we were mostly about research and education. Now we try to mix it up a little bit. So we did lose a lot of our Low Vision Club members during COVID. So I don't know, in fact, we're in some strategic planning right now. I don't know what's going to happen with the club. Because a lot of the club, the average age is probably 75, I would say. We've got club members well into their 90s. I don't have anyone that's 107. But I wouldn't be surprised if I get someone eventually. But we're having to sort of take a step back and say, what do we do now with the club? Because they're going to age out. And how can we make the club more appealing to the younger group that's coming in? One of the main things that we're asked over and over and over for the coalition, the expo, and the club is information about technology, because so much has changed that your smartphone, as you all know, can do almost anything in the world that you want it to do, right? But it's a matter of getting the trainings and things like that. So we're focusing a lot more on technology for the stuff that we do too. But out of all of those things, I highly recommend the coalition, because forming a coalition in your area can save you so much time and energy in trying to find your clients, your patrons, the help that they need. And it's a great way to form those relationships that last forever.
I was just going to ask, do you do the directory in Braille and audio too?
We do it in audio. We have not done it in Braille yet, but that's a really good idea.
I'll give it to you, Mom.
Thank you. Do you have a department for the blind and vision impaired in Texas?
Yes. We've got Texas Department of Blind Services. They're part of the coalition.
Really?
And they're always one of the main people at the expo as well.
So they don't regard your resource manual as a competition to anything they're doing?
Not at all. I mean, you know, and I don't know too if San Antonio is a huge place now. I think I don't even know what our population is. But it is the friendliest, most close-knit place. No one there approaches any of the services that we do in a competitive way. In fact, it's just the opposite. There'll be a time you get a phone call and we will be making phone calls to each other to the wee hours of the night to find the right help for this person. You know, they even help distribute the guides.
Okay, thank you.
Andrea?
1.52 million?
Yeah, and it's a lot of people.
How much money are you making on the expo?
I don't do it as a moneymaker.
But how much do you make?
But I try to at least pocket about $4,000 from it, just because we can do it better each time. I mean, going from a gymnasium, which was free, and the sanctuary where we had speakers, we had it this year at the Embassy Suites. It's Brooks Army Base area, and it's everyone that attended was, that's when all of a sudden I got more sponsors handing me their cards. This is great, this is really, you know, you've stepped it up, and you know, so I don't try to make it a money maker, but.
Is it time now to raise money on your sponsors?
Yeah. I think that's part of our strategic planning too, because really, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but when I first started, I came from running a school I had 32 teachers, and you know, my requirements and what I wanted to see done, if you're going to do anything, it's worth overdoing, right? Either do it and overdo it. I overdo everything. So Expo, the first few times, I'm like, yeah, this is kind of embarrassing. This isn't what I want. And so when we took it to the next level, I think we're now in a position to make it more economically pleasing to us. So, because it's still a lot of work. But it brings a lot of exposure to your station.
You understand money's okay too, right?
I do that? Now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm proud of it now.
All right.
You know what I mean? I like to know that when people attend this event, they're leaving with everything they came for and more, and those relationships.
Becca here with Radio Talk Book Service in Omaha. I can see that it's the Low Vision Resource Center that's putting this on. Are you the only ones that benefit from it, other than the exposure that the other organizations get?
Yes.
That $4,000 just goes straight to you?
Yep.
Yeah,
let me tell you about my staff, too. So it's me. And I have one part-time person, Jeff, who's amazing. So, yeah, Jeff and I do this whole thing with our volunteers.
Hail Jeff.
Jeff's awesome. Jeff is holding down the fort for me right now. Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Let me introduce Megan.
Don't feel like you have to fill time, Megan. Describe yourself.
What time I'm going?
Just do what feels comfortable, but don't feel like you have to
all right.
Fill an amount of time, because Jim Obradovich is staring at you with his beady eyes from the background.
No, All right. My name is Megan Harms. I'm the Arts and Culture Director at Mind's Eye.
I am a white woman in my early 40s with long gray hair. Today I happen to be wearing a blue dress with glow-in-the-dark jellyfish on it.
Turn out the lights.
And it has pockets for those of you that wonder. Can you hit the, where is the presentation box?
Lori?
Slideshow. This is a slideshow.
A, B, C.
Insert draw because on your slideshow.
Apologies to Lisa too, because yesterday I told her I didn't have a presentation because I didn't. Also, this isn't a very exciting actual presentation that's happening behind me, so because it's basically just the words I'm going to say, and it's really just for me to not have to hold paper. So, what's on the screen right now?
You turn it around so you can.
If you can, that would be even better. I don't have to.
Okay, you talk.
So what's on the screen right now is the conference logo and also the Mind's Eye logo with our tagline, Translating Vision into Audio. And above it is a thought bubble with Braille inside it that says hello and additional programs. And now can you see the screen? And I'm going to talk to you very quickly about three programs that we have. What's the clicky button? Spacebar? Okay. Okay. You all know Broadcast Information Services. I will not be talking about that. We also have Beepball, which I will talk about very, very quickly because I am not the expert. You will note that many of you have noted that there are four of us here from Mind's Eye this week. That's half of our staff. The other 3/8 of our staff are in Indianapolis at a Beepball tournament right now, and we have one at home. Then we're also going to hit the Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative, but then I'm really going to talk about audio description. So quickly, Beepball, I know a lot of you guys, I assumed a lot of you guys know about Beepball, so I'll just breeze through this. We have a couple programs in it. Within it, we do educational demonstrations where we go to schools and teach them how to play Beepball, and it's really about promoting inclusion and diversity. So sighted kids are playing with kids who are not sighted, et cetera, et cetera. And we break that down also into corporate demonstrations, which is the same, just teaching adults how to be inclusive and diverse. Lots of team building and that sort of thing. So that's how our Beepball started out. We also do fundraising. We have Beepball tournaments where the casual Beepball player can show up on a very hot, usually, Saturday afternoon. They get a free t-shirt, and they play Beepball in the sun all day. Do you guys need me to tell you what Beepball is, or it's adaptive? All right, I'll give you the quick rundown. It's adaptive baseball, basically. And as you might guess, the ball beeps, hence the name Beepball. The ball beeps, as do the bases. So when we play, everyone is blindfolded. So whether you are sighted or low vision, partially sighted or completely blind, everyone is wearing a mask. So imagine, when I say we play, that's not me. It would be a disaster. So I'm not a player of Beepball. We'll have a conversation. I'll tell you all about Beepball. Basically because I want to get onto my program. So Mike Curtis really should be the one that's telling you this, but he's away. We also have our Gateway Archers, which is the professional Beepball team that we have. They are a nationally competitive team. There is their Gateway Archers logo up in the corner. This is actually their 80s retro version of their logo, which is in, correct me if I'm wrong here, electric blue and hot pink, with the Gateway Arch with an arrow going through it, and some really 80s cool triangles, because nothing says 80s like triangles, I guess. So they are made up completely of blind and low vision players from the St. Louis area, and it's become pretty cool. They have like signing ceremonies for which team they're going to play on, and they practice. They're a real team. I mean, they're an actual team. They meet on a regular basis. They practice what seems like all the time to me. and they compete in tournaments all across the country, including the National B-Ball Association World Series, which is the last week in July. Also crazy hot because it's going to be in Beaumont, Texas.
It's been in Ames twice, FYI. That's Ames, Iowa, right here, Iowa.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And just keep in mind that Mike Curtis coaches the team as well as does all of the other stuff that goes along with it, including designing that stand as well.
Yeah, and Mike is our director of special initiatives, which really means he does all of our programs plus. So think of Mike today in this sun in Indianapolis. Hopefully it's not that hot.
Well, and they bought the beatball equipment to play beatball and then had the brilliant idea to use the equipment they already bought to continue to generate revenue and awareness during the months where people weren't playing beatball. And I've always been just so proud of Mind's Eye for coming up with that. I don't know what the original outlay is for the beatball equipment, but also I believe when they go into schools and do the DEI presentation and kids get to experience it, they get paid by some state education, something or somewhat. And I know fundraising is the nightmare of many of us, but it doesn't always have to be a $20,000 gala. It can be, we get, do you know how much?
I have no idea.
I think, $300, $500 every time we go into a school. That's beautiful thinking, and that's what this workshop.
Laura was nodding her head yes, but Angela.
Laura, do you know stuff?
Knows.
Yeah.
Corporations more. Our elementary schools, we have donation anywhere between $150 to $200. Universities a little more, and obviously if, Wells Fargo wants to have a team building, we're going to charge them,
It's brilliant.
Money.
And that's a little bit of revenue. It's brilliant. Sorry.
Yep. Perfect. Because I actually know very little about people.
I'm starting to think you hate people.
No, I do. I love watching people. Actually, before I was employed by Mind's Eye, I would go to people games and watch them.
Okay.
So, but now we're going to move on. to the Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative. So this is one of my programs. I'm in charge of audio description and the Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative, which started as an initiative that we kept going. And it's a group of arts and cultural institutions, disability and accessibility-based organizations, advocates, people with all types of disabilities, and we all come together. And I listed off some here. I listed off the ones that probably people from out of town would know, like the St. Louis Zoo, the Missouri History Museum, the Art Museum, the St. Louis Blues, the St. Louis Cardinals, but it's also a lot of much smaller organizations. We have tons of theaters that are involved with us, also places like Deaf Inc., which are ASL interpreters, Paraquad, Starkloff Institute, which is a huge disability program in St. Louis, Delta Gamma Center, which is kids. So we all come together bi-monthly, and we talk about all sorts of accessibility-related topics. And this is not specifically about blindness. This is all accessibility and on all disabilities. And we are still meeting via Zoom because we discovered that, wow, you could get tons of people on Zoom and they could come from tons of places. Although we are really St. Louis-based, the idea is that every city would have this type of thing. So every city would have all of their organizations, because while it's great to have out the input from people in other locations, we're working on one for October about the intersectionality of immigrants and refugees with disabilities and that sort of thing. And we have, every city has a different population of immigrants and refugees. And while it's great to hear about what some city is doing with their Vietnamese population, we really need to talk about things about our Bosnian population or our Ethiopian population or our now Afghani population. So we try to make it as city specific as we can. And we just did one with about service animals, which is great. We did website accessibility. We've done basically anything you can think of based on accessibility. We've done it. But then there are times when we thought it was really important to expand. And while we say it was adjacent, like accessibility adjacent, it was we did some social justice things, and we try, and although we say arts and culture, we're pretty broad with what is culture. We had recently one about accessibility in athletic spaces, including the Blues and Cardinals and that sort of thing. So. And here's some more information about the Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative, which we call it ACAC or ACAC. There's our logo, also designed by Mike Curtis, and it is three sides of a box, and the words Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative have broken the fourth barrier, and they're coming outside the box. They've broken the barrier. And it's really about knowledge sharing and awareness and education. And again, as I said, all disabilities and access in general. It's because there are so many different organizations involved, we're all trying. There's a lot, honestly, there's a lot of this is what failed for us. That's almost every meeting is here's what we tried to do in accessibility and failed at. And then we try to come up with something better. And we have, there's also on there our logo for the IDEA Awards. And it is a circle and says ACAC IDEA Awards 2021 and has a light bulb in the center. And that is awards for inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility. We preach a lot about adding the A, because all of these organizations have DI. They preach about diversity. And I will say, have a conversation with me for 20 minutes, and there are certain things I will say over and over. There is no diversity, equity, and inclusion without accessibility. And if you don't include the A, you might as well just forget about those other letters, in my opinion. And we gave awards to an individual, an organization, a supporter, which is actually a funder, but we didn't want to say funder, a supporter of accessibility. And a workplace is what we were supposed to be giving awards for. We are having a hard time actually having, and I think that says a lot, we're having a hard time finding people who will actually nominate their workplace for being super great about accessibility. Did I forget a category? Okay. So that's what the ACAC is about. It's really about educating people. We had one of our topics was just basic ADA, because it is really amazing. The things that people don't know are just the law. On our service animal one, you know, one of my questions when I go into a theater is, what's your service animal policy? Which is a trick question. Because your policy is service animals are welcome. That's the end of the conversation. And we get all sorts of answers. And a lot of people tell us, well, that doesn't apply to them. It does. Everything applies to you. It's the ADA. So that's a little bit about the Arts and Culture Accessibility Cooperative. And if you have questions about that, we can come back to it. But first, this is the one exciting slide that I have. It has photos. So now we're going to talk about audio description. And I am going to start at the top right and describe each one of these photos. The top right is a row. I don't know what I cropped out here, but we had about three or four rows of listeners at a Cardinals game at Busch Stadium. So we're looking down a row of listeners, and several of them are wearing blue headsets. I was just talking to Mary Frances about this earlier. Pandemic times, we stopped asking for our headsets back, so we were giving out the free cheapo headsets, so oftentimes they're brightly colored, so they're easy for us to find in the crowd who's using our equipment. So we have rows and rows of people listening to audio description at a Cardinals game. And then below that is a picture of our friend Rita and her husband Tony, and they are standing in front of a tree wrapped in white twinkle lights, and that was at a Christmas tour of lights. We did a actual bus tour. We got on into a van or a bus, and we drove around the Way of Lights, which happens to be on the at the Shrine of Our Lady of the Snows, which happens to be where our office is located, so it was nice. But we hopped on the bus with them and did audio description. And then next to them is a big giant blue bear in a Santa costume sitting next to some kids, and that is Louie, is who the bear is. And it was obviously a game close to Christmas because that was at a St. Louis Blues game. And we were in a suite with a bunch of kids listening to audio description. And then we have three folks, one with a white cane and one with a guide dog, and that is outside at last year's Shakespeare in the Park. And then the last photo is actually at the Missouri History Museum. And I'm going to talk shortly about our quality control specialist. And I, on this day, this was the second day of training at the Missouri History Museum. I was training their docents on audio description. And at the end of the training, our QC specialist came in, and the docents that we just trained took our QC folks on a tour, and they're actually, one has her hand up and she's following a replica of the arch against the wall. So that's all the exciting description you get from this presentation. So I will tell you quickly about how our AD team works. We have about 26 active members, and that includes myself, who does the majority of the things. And then Angela, who is our COO, just started taking over a lot of AD stuff, basically because she was tired of hearing me complain that I had too much to do. So she said, just give me some of it. So she has really helped me out a lot. Then we have describers, and that's about 24 people who we do not call volunteers. They are called describers. We have a description team, and they are trained. And the reason we don't call them volunteers is because they are paid contractors. We have 1099s, they are paid, and they receive roughly a third of the amount of money that Mind's Eye is paid. And yes, we get paid, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. And then we have ambassadors. So every show we send a describer and an ambassador. The ambassador is also trained because, you know, something happens and the describer falls out of their chair at the show. The ambassador can hop in, but they are volunteers on that day. So you may be getting paid as a describer one day, and the next day you're going to a different show as an ambassador and you're not getting. Okay. And then we have our quality control specialist, which is a team of six currently, and they are all blind or partially sighted. They're all different ages, races, genders. Some are completely blind. One is low vision. She can actually drive, so if we want something, we talk about different types of things that each one can do. So if I need something that we want to test magnification on, I turn to her. If I want something that needs to be tested with a screen reader, we turn to somebody else. So we try to have a wide range there. And they are paid hourly, portal to portal. So if one of our quality control specialists is going to go to a audio described show, we pay them from the moment they leave their house to the moment they step back inside their house, because we want to know not just how the audio description was, but how the whole process was. How was their experience? Was it hard for them to get transportation to this theater, but not to that theater? So they're paid the entire time, and they attend all sorts of audio described events, and they fill out super in-depth feedback forms. I'm a big fan of forms and surveys and spreadsheets. Spreadsheets, woohoo. Where's my spreadsheet, woohoo? Yes, my spreadsheets. I'm a big fan of spreadsheets, and so they give lots of extra information. And if you're wondering why they're paid, and you're thinking, well, we have thousands of listeners who are blind, why don't you just ask one of them to go? It's because paid feedback is super important. One, you're going to get much truer responses when someone knows it's their job. Oh, it's great. It was great. It was wonderful. We just thank you so much for being there. But was it? Because I was listening to it and I didn't think it was great. Like, I've definitely heard some things that were wrong, or I heard that person in the lobby complaining, or I saw that usher pet your guide dog without asking. Are you sure everything was great? Paid feedback? They'll tell you for sure, because we don't want fake feedback, first of all. And also, it's really important to let people know that you appreciate their opinion, and we understand that we are taking your time, and it's not just some free tickets to something. It's important, and we really actually appreciate your opinion. So I can get really mouthy about that. So, and we've also recently added to our contracts with the venues, again, we're getting paid, that if they include extra tickets for our QC, that we will share more information about what our feedback was about the venue. That's not to say that we would be holding back the info if they didn't give us tickets, but it seems to work because people just started giving us free tickets when I added that, so. Training. Training is for everyone. Everyone needs to be trained, and they need to keep being trained. Training is ongoing forevermore, and training is really important to get training from different organizations. My first 3 or 4 trainings came from Mind's Eye before I started there, and from the American Council of Blind. You get all of these different types of audio description from different places. So it's important to have different types of training. There is no certification currently for audio description. If you see something online that says, take this class and you'll be certified in audio description, or if you see someone that says, I'm a certified audio describer, that's not true. ACBRAP, and I always forget what that stands for, but it's the people who give accreditation for like orientation and mobility and all of the, if anybody knows what these letters are, shout them out, the ACBRAP. They've been working on an audio description certification for probably 5 years. Hopefully it's coming sometime. I have been to trainings where you get a certificate at the end, you are not certified, so keep that in mind. It's also really important that you have a diversity of training. If your training is really diversified, I have gone to some crazy specific audio description trainings. Some are listed on there. Opera, one that was specifically about queer audio description and then a separate one that was about drag. I've one for different types of dance, for young audiences and very young audiences. Those were two things. So there's so much training out there. There is this idea of like, oh yeah, I took this training with ACB 5 years ago, I'm good. Also, audio description changes so much, even in the last couple of years. It's just a totally different industry. So please keep that in mind. And also, we have on-demand training resources. We have a Google Classroom that has, at this point, probably hundreds of videos and things that I have made up and put on there. It's really helpful to have. And now, the question you've all been waiting for. Who pays you? The patrons never pay us. The venues always pay us. It is fee for service. We never do not get paid from someone. We do have a few venues that we have worked into some grant that they're covering for us. There's no one that we just say, oh no, we got you, we comped you, because that's crazy. Because we provide a service, and you would not pay an ASL interpreter. You would not pay the company that installs your wheelchair ramp. We provide a service, and we get paid for the service. There is a range of prices, and our pricing, mainly because when I started, I didn't really know what to do, and it seemed like the pricing we had before was really arbitrary. Like, well, I know this person, so I'm gonna make it this amount. So our prices are based on number of seats. So no one is paying us less than $150, and that's what anyone with 500 seats or less is paying, is $150. And the most someone is currently paying us, which just should be higher, is $400. And that's per event, per performance. So, if we're doing one performance of every show that you're doing and you're doing five shows, you're paying us for every one of those shows. And you're paying us if not a single patron shows up. And they're paying us because we are providing a service. It's mind-boggling to me that it would never not be paid. And I know that has been out there, so. Here's the most important sentence that I can tell you and that you should all have, and I try to not use with venues until I have to. You are providing a reasonable accommodation in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, period. Period. That's the law. That's the law. So what happens sometimes is a patron will call us and say, I really want to go to this show at this place. Are you going to be there? And the first answer is, let me see. Yes, we are going to be there on that day. Or we're not that day, but here's a different day, and that's the day that they will offer you. The next one is, we're not scheduled to be at that show at all, but that's someone we work with. Let me talk to them. 9.5 times out of 10, that venue is on board because they know somebody's going to show up and you've already worked with them. And then the last option is that someone we've not worked with before. Why don't you call the venue and I'll call the venue? Because then they have someone that's asking for the service before I contact them and tell them, you're going to pay me for this service. Because then they don't have an option. I'm not saying that venues don't ignore us sometimes, and very rarely do I bust out that sentence, but I do when it comes down to someone has asked you for a reasonable accommodation and you're denying them, which makes you non-compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Everybody on board with that? And yeah, yes, Amy.
Okay, so say the venue says, F you, we're not going to do it. Do you then either do it yourself or help the patron file a complaint against them with the ADA?
So we've never actually had to do that before, but we do have the resources to give them that information. Usually the threat, or the not even threat, we've never been threatened before, we just say that sentence as a kind of veiled threat. And magically, it's like they finally, a veil has been lifted. But oftentimes, you may need to say that to more than one person in the organization, because maybe that person doesn't understand, and you need to speak to someone else. Or the magic words, they're bored. Because many, many of these places are nonprofit theaters, and the first response is, well, we're a small theater, and we can't afford it, and blah, 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 like, okay, then which can you afford, a lawsuit or $150? But yes, I wouldn't say that we would help them, but we would certainly point them in the right direction and give them the information. And that threat has much more bite also when it then comes from the patron that says it. So, yes, ma'am.
Thank you. This is Yvonne from Virginia. The difficult situation that in which we find ourselves is that we started live audio description pretty aggressively pre-COVID,
uh-huh.
2017. It flew. I mean, it was awesome. People wanted it on both sides of the aisle, both our consumers, the theaters, so on and so forth. Everybody got along for nothing.
Oh,
it was done that way. So
uh-huh.
I've already have in my mind that next year,
because
I just got to Virginia Voice, next year I'm going to create a template, get it out there early, let them know we are charging now. How do I, or any ideas on that, how to gracefully or not so gracefully make that transition?
Yep. I have, you have two things going for you. One, you're new to the organization, so you can just say, well, that I'm. This is the way I'm doing it. The second one being, well, that was before COVID.
My girl.
Things changed. That was, and that's what, and I'll tell you that we have some venues. So let me back up a little bit. I started as a volunteer circa 2017. And then, as a volunteer describer, I was always just in audio description. I started in audio description in 2017, was doing audio description then for someone else during this time, and then was hired in 2019 to run the audio description program. And there were venues then that we were not charging. And some, as I said, some we were charging, some we were charging this amount, some we were charging that amount, some we weren't charging at all. And not only are we having problems now getting those people to pay us now, they also have no buy-in in the sense that before we just showed up and then we did it, and things that we asked for that are very simple for things for them to do, which I'm gonna show you in just a minute, they have no interest in cooperating with us at all, because that's not the way it was set up to begin with. So I would urge you all, if you have not started an AD program and are thinking about it, or have started it but only kind of, don't half-ass it, and don't start with the, oh, we're going to try this out, and we're going to do it for free a little bit, and then we're going to try a little bit of this, because all that does is make it 100,000 times harder when you're like, oh yeah, this is good, we're gonna keep going. Put the work in put the work in first, and it will only get easier, because every venue that has started after we got our shit together is so much more bought into the program in general. And they also don't treat you, they treat us a different way. We just had this, Angela and I just went to this meeting with a small theater that, and if any of you have the theater background, it's a very small theater that thinks very, very highly of themselves. And thinks that they really think that, like, that everyone in the world should know who they are. And like, we're asking you for $150 and some cooperation. Like, it's not a big deal in the grand scheme of things. Don't tell me about how you can't afford it. Especially because there are theaters out there that we know actually can't afford it. But they had a really bad experience, because when we started the program, and this was just, there was a lot of trial and error, and they seemed to get all of the error. There was a lot of things that went wrong because we didn't have the right equipment, or apparently we didn't have any equipment. And you know, the describer was literally just sitting next to the person and talking out loud. And doing all sorts, and they weren't charged, and they didn't respect what we were doing as a service, because it was presented to them as, oh, you're our guinea pig, and we're gonna see how this goes, but we don't know what we're doing, so just let us, you know, try it out. Instead of, you all need to walk in and say, this is how it works, we know what we're doing, and this is how it's gonna be done, because again, we're providing a service. And that makes the confidence is key. You know, you walk in and you tell them how it's done, and that's how it gets done. Also, oh yeah, Penn.
I have a question about who pays the $150.
Yep.
Is it the actual theater, or is it the production company that's putting on the show?
So that depends, because we do have places where the venue pays us, the actual building pays us. And then we have places where the theater, the majority of them are the theater is paying for us. And we don't do a lot of touring companies, but we do with some of our biggest venues. If you are in St. Louis, the Enterprise Center, they have tour codes. They have touring companies that come in. Now, there is the possibility that some of those touring companies may actually be touring with a describer, and praise the day that actually happens, when there's a touring company comes to town and they've brought their describer with them. Until that happens, no. But a lot of these places, So the one place where the venue is paying us, or some of them, that's because the venue requires that anything that happens in their venue is completely accessible, including having audio description. So the venue pays us, but the theater is actually paying the venue for that. It's written into their contract, if that makes sense. So in most cases, it's the theater that's paying us. So some of our theaters are actually in different locations. So there'll be a theater company that does some performances in one building and some other performances later in the season in another building. The theater pays us. Yeah, for the most part, it's the theater. All right. And I was talking about cooperation. Some of the things that we ask for, and this looks like a big list, but in reality, this is nothing a theater company wouldn't already have and they wouldn't already be doing. So we ask them for a script because we need to know. We need to have the ability to preview at least one performance. We need to have, and I say need to, and some places don't give us all this stuff, but we do. The costumes list, the props list, the set renderings or photos. The program, if there is a rehearsal video, we'll do that. Because all those things are things that they already have. They're already making a props list for the props guy, and they already have those things, we just ask for them. One really important one that I skipped over there was the character questionnaire. And this has been something that has been kind of new and changing in audio description. I send a specific character questionnaire to every theater before every performance, specifically asking four questions for the actor, and then the rest of the questions about the character. And those are based on the actor's pronouns, how the actor wants to be described as far as their skin color or their hair type, or if they want to be described as a wheelchair user or, you know, a Puerto Rican man or blah, 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 because we use that in the introductory notes. And we want to describe the actor in a respectful way. And then once the rest of the questions are about the character, so then we use all that information. That has more boring stuff, like what's your character wearing? Do they have a limp in the show? Do they have a crazy cartoon voice? That sort of thing. Something else you'll note on there is an ad in their program. So every theater that we work with, most of them are putting out programs for the whole run of their show, and we're asking for an ad in that program. And we may only be describing one performance of that show. But of course, they're not printing different programs for every performance. So the ad is there for everyone to see through the whole run of that show, and oftentimes it's for the whole season. So that's part of it. And also, we ask them for cooperation. And marketing is the next thing I suspect someone would ask about. So the things that we do is we, Mind's Eye, we do direct community outreach, meaning I send out direct emails to our listeners, to our mailing list. We have a specific AD mailing list to specific groups like Lighthouse for the Blind, St. Louis, and Delta Gamma, like I mentioned earlier. We also, of course, post them on our socials. We have PSAs on our broadcast. Oh, I forgot to put the link in for the registration page, but that's okay. I will show you our event calendar. This is the Mind's Eye website. And if I can use this mouse, I'll scroll down to this calendar. Just kidding, I won't do that, so that's fine, but you can go to the Mind's Eye website and there will be a calendar of events. And you may know that there are 28 events in June that are all audio description. And now I left the mouse, come back. Why can I see it up there and not down here? Okay, well, I'll tell you what's on the screen right now. So those are the things that we do. What the venue or the organization does is those ads in the programs that I just told you about. They do promotion on their, I know it's weird, right? They do their promotion on their website and their mailers. And there is a really great example up there right now. That's from Opera Theater of St. Louis. And this was an actual paper mailer that went out as a booklet that's about 20 pages long, and it had every performance in it. And this was just one of, like, three or four places that they mentioned Mind's Eye specifically. It even has our logo at the bottom. This is a calendar of every Opera Theater production for their entire season. And they've noted on each calendar date when there is audio description or ASL, which is spectacular. Also, integration into their regular marketing, and just like that example is, we have some places we'll say, well, we sent it out to this one family we know that has, the mom is blind. Oh, it's great, so you told one person. We're great that you're paying us so you can tell one person. That mailer didn't go to one person who they knew was blind. That went to everyone on their mailing list. So it's really important that it's integrated in. And I would, what happened to the mouse?
I don't know, it's broken. What's happening? Do you need to hit the space bar? That might do something.
I don't know, it's broken.
Because now I can't advance any slides.
Well, there's
your mouse. Wait, there he is.
All right, are we good? Okay. And quickly, just some other things that you might need to know about audio description. At least 80% of audio description is just educating people on what audio description is and why you need to have it. Logistics are the key. I've heard from a couple different people who have started audio description that it's not just somebody walking into a theater and sitting down and talking. There's a bunch of stuff that goes in on the front end, including spreadsheets and forms and surveys. And one other thing, because I know you're all dealing with volunteer readers, it's not for everyone. It's not for every volunteer that is currently reading right now for a number of reasons, which I can tell you all about at a later date if you'd like. It's really great for people who like to write. It's really great for people who can think on their feet when things like something happens on stage that's not supposed to happen. So people who are good problem solvers, people who are detail oriented, so they actually are paying attention to the things that are happening on stage and tell you what's happening on stage. So those are your basics of audio descriptions. And now please, any more questions? And or awkward silence. I like that Laura's asking me a question. I did not pay her to ask a question.
No, I actually just wanted to throw something in because I've talked to so many people who are doing original podcasts for their station that we have our original podcast ear to ear where we interview community partners, and we'll quite often interview our audio description partners and those theater companies. And obviously, that gets the information about the description out to our listeners, but then also we can put a recording of that interview into a blog post, and we share the blog post to socials, and we tag those partners, and those partners have a lot more Facebook followers than we do, and quite often they'll share the interview because they want everyone to know how thoughtful and accessible they are, and it just is another way to raise our profile in the community.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, this was Laura from my side.
I failed our communications director by not adding her communication into things that we do. I'm sorry, Laura.
Oh, good. Angela, yes.
Angela, with Mind's Eye as well. Megan did pay me to do this. No, there was one thing that we failed in preparing the slides. We continued audio description during the pandemic.
I actually meant to probably have when Devon asked that question.
But virtual audio description is like here to stay. We hammered out a process for that, so we still provide audio description for digital, virtual events, performances. We were working with the St. Louis University for a student who needed audio description for videos for a biology class, working with virtual performances that some of our theater companies are still doing. So, I mean, maybe Columbus 2023, we can talk about virtual audio description. There's a lot that goes into it. What's that?
Former training videos. We've had to produce a couple of
them. Yeah, training videos.
Training videos. So, and then
because those things happen, we've also been approached not just in our own community, but from other communities too. So there's opportunity. It could be a lucrative option if you have the right setup, though, because again, it does require there's a whole different operational process for that.
Yeah, and I will point out, I'm surprised Angela didn't point this out. Something else I failed to put in there. We do not have a single grant for audio description. All right, give the microphone back to Angela.
Your audio description program can fund itself. Except in an error in my own coding, we did not, I coded it towards audio description, that was not. We had zero grants for our FY22 budget. Zero grant dollars went into our audio description program. All of that came from fee-for-service and or direct sponsorships from our local power company. The ID awards, there's a light bulb, made sense. For ACAC, but we raised all of that money through fee-for-service for audio description.
And I wouldn't even use the term raised,
because we
charged that amount of money and received it because we are a service provider.
Audio Reader did physics videos for a high school student. They had YouTube videos of walking on the moon, and we got paid to, the school district paid us to describe it. That was a very specific volunteer. You had to have somebody who knew physics to be able to describe it, but
it was just
a lucrative opportunity.
We just did biology for one student and found that out. I will also say virtual came up because of the pandemic, and I had only been employed by Mind's Eye for a couple months, and it was pure self-preservation. I didn't want to lose my job. Every audio describer I knew in the world, and I mean globally, was not working, and I said, I can't let that happen, so let's just figure it out, and we did.
Just quick question. We actually had a listener reach out to us about putting the audio description from a theatrical performance that they could not attend and add it into our broadcast. Does that make any sense?
For a couple reasons. For a couple reasons, it doesn't make sense. One, you'll never get the rights to be from the theater to be able to do it.
This is a theater department.
Well, if it's...
Sorry, they're not union.
Our copyright exemption and stuff, you can broadcast once a community event or experience that's open to the entire community. We had this conversation with the U.S. Copyright Registrar a few years ago, and so let's say it was Shakespeare in the Park, and the entire community could attend at no cost. Then you could air that. Like, we have on the Capitol State House grounds, the biggest event of the year in Des Moines, Iowa, is Yankee Doodle Pops. The Des Moines Symphony, you saw Capitol, long lawn that comes down toward us. The symphony is down at the bottom, and we fill the yard with over 100,000 people. And they're in lawn chairs and blankets, and the symphony plays, and they shoot the fireworks off over the river. And Iris Audio describes that. But I had to check, but because it's a one-time community event with no barriers to people, or Shakespeare in the Park, or something like that, yup, you can air it once, kind of like a drive-by. But if it's a produced, inside a theater or something, the event, even if a guy writes the play himself, which we had happen in the Iowa City area 2 years ago or something, Jim, I went somewhere, a student produced a play, he had the kind of vision impairment that runs in families. He had it, and his family was coming to the play for his graduate project, and so I went up to Iowa City and described his play for his family. But he said it would be great if you broadcast this on Iris, and I had to tell him I could not, even though he gave me the rights right to my face. So the answer's no. And unless it's like a wide-open community party or something like that.
The other problem there is the recording itself, because we may be able to record what the describer is saying, but you can't hear what's happening on stage anyway, so it would be really boring. It would be really boring.
Anybody else?
Megan, I believe that was an incredibly thorough deal.
You're supposed to give me